Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're looking at Budget 2023 focus. Of course, the main idea here is to look at the tax system and perhaps see what should be inside, not just what's to be presented, especially when it comes to looking at the strain on the nation's finances. Joining me in the studio right now is Aurobindo Ponia, the PwC Executive Director, is also looking at tax, of course. Bindo, thanks very much for taking the time to come over to Astro Awani. There's a lot that needs to be unpacked. Let's start with the retabling of the budget that is going to be done on the February 24th. What can we expect from the budget?
Thank you for having me here, Ibrahim. Yep. The previous budget was last year before Parliament was dissolved. So this is a retabling of Budget 23. And personally, I don't expect any major changes from the previous budget itself. So generally what would happen is that the budget would see allocations. So basically we have our revenue, where we allocate that revenue to. So I believe the allocations would be similar. There would be allocations for the B40, M40 group. There'll be allocations for SMEs. There'll be allocations for ESG purposes. Yep. So these allocations may vary slightly compared to previous years. And some allocations may be removed. For example, there's talk of that 15 billion flood elevation program, that's going to be scrapped, etc. They're going to relook that. Now, in terms of taxes itself, most budgets will not see major changes in taxes. It rarely happens. And in this case, although the previous one, when I spoke to you the last time, I mentioned an election budget, there would be no major differences. This one is probably going to have the same problem in the sense that we have a coalition government and they need to, I would say, meet the interests of every party in the coalition. And there are going to be state elections as well.
The interest of every party should be the interest of Malaysians.
Yes.
Not political parties.
Yes.
But, you know, you and I know the realities of things where they need to appease the political parties first before the nation.
Absolutely.
This is what upsets me.
Yes.
By the way.
Good policy always tends to, I would say, fall apart when it meets politics.
Okay. Yep. We're talking clearly about GST. Yes. And the finance minister / prime minister has unequivocally mentioned in the parliament, first day tabling, in fact, that no new taxes are going to be introduced. In particular, no GST taxes are going to be introduced. He mentioned also that he's going to be looking at the idea of reducing subsidies, combating corruption. Basically, if the bucket is flowing out of the water, just plot the holes first. But generally speaking, we still need to talk about new forms of taxes. The tax right now is very narrow. How do you think we're going to be looking at, you know, supplementing income for this budget?
Absolutely. I think supplementing income for this budget is going to be difficult, right? For one reason is that with no new taxes, I think at the last time I spoke to you, our tax to GDP ratio is quite low.
Yes.
We are 11.4% when the average is something like about 19% for Asia.
Yes.
Yep. So I think we have dropped from about 14% to 11.4%. That 3% differential equates to today's GDP at about almost 50 billion ringgit. Yep. So tax collection becomes very important, the administration itself. Yep. I'll come back to the administration, yeah. But in terms of your first question, GST not being reintroduced, etc., we have this hole which we need to fill. That is definite. I mean, it was disappointing that GST was not going to be reintroduced, at least in this budget. But I hope as the government stabilizes, as state elections go past and all that, it could be an off-budget measure to reintroduce GST. Now, GST as a new tax is a political hot potato.
It may be
good policy, but from a political perspective, politicians tend to be afraid of introducing it.
Not a little bit, but yes.
Yes, exactly. So politicians look at it from today and tomorrow. GST is basically for the next decade, 50 years, etc., and all that.
Having said that, we're looking at this government cobbled together, and it's not easy for them to actually manage the kind of expectations from all the various parties.
Absolutely.
This can easily break apart, in one swell swoop. So how do you think the finance minister is going to manage this, where he knows for a fact that GST is needed, but he also knows also for a fact that to introduce it is also difficult? How do you bridge, do you see him bridging this kind of discrepancy?
Okay. My personal view on this is that they need to know how to sell GST to the electorate. Yeah? My view is that post-pandemic, we have seen major strains on the populace. Our B40 group, even our M40 group, they have been dipping into their EPF savings. And that problem is going to basically come back to roost in a few years because we are becoming an aging nation by 2030, which is just 7 years down the line. So When that comes to roost, we are going to have a big problem then because people do not have enough money for EPF, from EPF, for their retirement savings. And there's a large part of the population which does not even have EPF savings because they're not in formal employment.
Yes.
Yep. I am actually a proponent for introducing a kind of a social security system, a uniform social security
system.
Which
is consistent with what the government's trying to do, actually.
Exactly. So my point here being is that a GST, when it is introduced, my thought is that maybe we should ring fence it and say that the revenue from GST would be used to fund a social security system. So from a population, the average man, woman on the street, yep, they say, okay, I'm paying this consumption tax. It's a broad-based tax, but I know that the revenue from it is ring-fenced in order to fund a social security system. Now, from a government perspective, it's going to be, let's say the last collection of GST was 48 billion, if I'm not mistaken, and that will only increase over the years, okay? So if GST is reintroduced, let's say we use a figure of 48 billion. Mm. I did some quick math itself. Our Bantuan Kerajaan Malaysia, I think it goes to about 8.7 million people. That's about 25, 27% of the population, right? Now, that comes to about 10 billion, right? Now, Pakeso, our SOXO agency, I think they pay benefits, if I'm not mistaken, I took a note down, of about 4 plus billion annually here, to about 670,000 people. Then we've got our social welfare department, for the hardcore poor. They are paying out something about 2 billion. These are just estimated figures taken, I've gone to the websites, some of them are old, etc., but I don't think they differ that much, okay? So that's already about 16 to 18 billion. And then we've got subsidies, let's say petrol, diesel, LP and gas. I think the last number was about 37.3 billion. Now, if I take all the subsidies, all this assistance and all that, it already comes to about 60 billion, right? Now, this amount at the end of the day doesn't just go to the people who need it, but it also goes to the T20. Yeah? The guy driving a BMW 7 Series is able to pour on 95 at a subsidized price. And the guy driving a motorbike also gets the same subsidized price. Now, if we have a formal social security system, if we start maybe, I would say, removing the subsidies, but ensuring that people are getting cash aid, right, through a subsidy, through a social security system, then what would happen is that we can manage some of the leakages better.
Okay.
Yeah? So we can, what the government loses in the GST revenue in the sense that it's a ring fence for social security, they should be able to gain back from the removal of the subsidies.
And having said that, what you're saying is not just academic, it's actually public knowledge. People know that enhancing social security is actually quite crucial.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure the folks at MOF is also aware of this.
Absolutely.
What is stopping them from executing it?
End of the day, if you look at it, what we have been doing for the last decades is effectively putting band-aids on problems. Whenever a problem arises, we tend to decide to deal with that problem. But I believe it's time for us to look at it holistically. Our subsidy systems, our tax systems, etc. Our tax system was designed in the 1960s.
So, Income Tax Act 1967?
So it's designed in the 1960s. So it's like as though we've been driving a car from the 1960s. It may not be a classic car, all right? But it's a car nonetheless, all right?
It is a classic car. It's like, I don't know, 60 years ago, right?
Well, it's not a Jaguar E-Type. Like,
no, it's not. It's just an old car, even worse. Oh, my God.
So the question is that we've been repairing that engine, we've been replacing the tires, etc., and all that, but it's maybe time for us to look at replacing the car. Right?
Again, I'm pretty sure that the MOF, under this leadership of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, is fully aware of this.
Yes.
But it's also important for us to take stock and cognizant of the fact that it's not a singular government. It is a cobbled together government.
Yes.
And I'm sure that some of the coalition members might not necessarily be on board in terms of the revamp and the rejuvenation of the tax system.
Absolutely. I think that the rejuvenation of the tax system has been discussed many times over many administrations.
Yeah? I agree,
Yes, it's been discussed many times over many administrations. The political will becomes important. And I think at the end of the day is that governments of the government of the day looks at the here and now. How do I deal with this here and now? Okay. So I think right now at the here and now, is effectively trying to keep the coalition together, trying to deal with the state elections.
Okay, because of this, I think we need to move on to the next point, which is, of course, almost all prior budgets have had an idea of benefiting the rakyat directly.
Yes.
For instance, lower tax rates, expanded tax reliefs, and many more. Some would argue that this also would benefit not just the M40 specifically, but the T20 again, again. Yep. RPGT, for instance. Yeah. Yes. So do you expect similar measures to be implemented in this budget for this particular 24th tabling?
Yep. I don't really expect many measures to, benefit the T20, but I do see measures maybe benefiting the M40, similar to the previous budget which was announced, but it was then basically when Parliament was dissolved. Yeah. So this is the change of the band itself, the 50 to 70,000. Mm. I expect that to be maintained. Mm. Yeah. I expect there maybe to be some expansion of reliefs, etc. Right. These are, I think the last time we discussed everything from maybe EPF contributions, trying to increase the EPF contributions for people to, in a way, replenish their EPF savings. Mm. So that's also a possibility. I expect there to be maybe some movements on excise duties. Yeah? But if, for example, the Singapore budget was just announced a couple of days ago, if anything is going to impact the T20 group, it's potentially higher taxes maybe in forms of stamp duty, and certain excise duties in terms of luxury goods, etc. Those type of changes could be then implemented to raise revenue, but only impacting the higher income segment.
Before we go on any further, I mean, the whole classification of the T20 and 40B40 also has its own problems.
Yes.
I think we need to move on past that, but you know, still talking about the haves and the have-nots, it's a lot easier to refer to it as such.
Yes.
Now, 97% of businesses, based on PwC's report, basically shows that businesses or enterprises are either small or medium-sized enterprises, even micro-enterprises.
Yeah.
We're looking at many employed individuals now carrying out their own businesses to supplement their own income.
Yeah.
What would be some of the ideas that you can share with us in terms of the new tax, new budget that's going to be tabled in terms of supporting the SMEs?
Okay. Now, the current system already has quite a number of tax incentives for SMEs in terms of, their professional development of their employees, in terms of digitalization, automation, etc. So I believe that those incentives are more than sufficient, but we have to now start looking, in terms of the grants. So grants are given to a number of SMEs in terms of, for example, automation. Yeah? Because SMEs at the end of the day, by their definition, maybe are small and medium enterprises. Their finances may not be strong enough at the end of the day to go ahead to a bank and then in a way get funding from banks. So I think assistance from governments by way of grants or guarantees, etc., are invaluable to SMEs to grow, and especially during a post-pandemic period, in a way for them to get back on stronger footing.
Bindu, let's talk a little bit more about the record growth that we saw in 2022. Having said that, we're looking at a slower growth for this year. On top of that, you noted earlier that our tax to GDP ratio is low at 11% or thereabouts compared to other countries. ASEAN, you were mentioning that we're looking at 19% on average. And it was recently announced by LHDN, we've had a record collection of taxes for last year. What would explain these differences, or this contradiction when it comes to reconciling the notion that we had a record collection for last year and yet still have a very low tax to GDP ratio vis-a-vis other countries?
Okay. I would have been very surprised if we did not have a record collection last year. We went into a pandemic in 2020. Our collections dipped.
Okay.
2021, we were still in a pandemic. 2022, we came out of the pandemic. So there was a lot of pent-up demand. We saw economic growth of 8.9%, if I'm not mistaken. So I think last time I spoke to you, I predicted 8.9 under BNM's numbers. So, and there was also a lot of back orders. Factories who had not fulfilled orders were rushing out to deliver those orders in 2022 as the economy improved. And the economy opened up. Borders opened up and the supply chains basically were no longer stuck. So this saw record sales in 2022. So it is not as though the tax base grew in 2022. It was the same tax base, but there was more revenue generated in 2022 because of what happened in 2021 and 2020. And this led to higher tax collections. And this was not just limited to Malaysia. You saw the same thing in Indonesia, in Spain, etc., and all that. Record collections in 2022 because they were coming from a low base. So that's, and what I would see in 2023 is that as things stabilize, we will no longer have the record collection. Mm. So we spiked up, but now we will plateau.
Okay, so record collection for a narrow tax base, all well and good because of the past 2 years being suppressed. We're also looking at the realities of things where GST is not going to be introduced, at least in the near term. And we're also looking at the political landscape where it's not easy to get things done when it comes to structural reform. Knowing all this, what's next for Malaysia?
So I think the short term, what we can look at is improving that tax collection, the tax to GDP collection, improving.
Is digitizing
that
one of them? Shadow economy battling?
Absolutely. Last time I spoke to you, shadow economy was a problem. That means it still is a problem now.
It still is, yeah.
Yes. And in the last budget, the budget which was tabled but not passed in Parliament, they announced e-invoicing. And subsequent to that, IRB has also announced e-invoicing. They are going heavy e-invoicing. I believe that is a crucial first step. Digitalizing the, I would say, the payment systems, digitalizing the collection systems, digitalizing the reporting systems. Now, this would then allow better enforcement, better collection, and hopefully this would then translate to a higher tax to GDP ratio, and I would say increased tax collections, which would allow the government to probably then put the money to good use.
You know, I recently came back from the visiting the Mercedes plant in Pekan, and the MITI minister, former finance minister Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul, was there to officiate the launch. There, I could see directly in front of my eyes in terms of how foreign direct investments can actually come in and actually rejuvenate the economy at a local level, and of course filters up towards the nation as well. Yeah. We're also looking at the global minimum tax introduction. It's going to be done this year. I have been monitoring this for quite some time, actually. And to be frank, very, very interested to see where we can, I wouldn't say manipulate, I guess take advantage of this. We're also looking at Malaysia being a lower cost base for many international companies. I've had Maida coming over, I've had Invest KL, Invest Selangor. They're looking at many international companies to come in this country and inject more foreign direct investments, type of foreign direct investments. Domestic direct investment is also quite important. We're looking at better tax incentives, playing a prominent role in this. All this is good news. Am I right for the country?
Absolutely, yeah.
So where do you see foreign direct investments coming in? Surely the political risk has been abated, or at least to what it was before, it has been mitigated to some degree now.
Okay, yeah. Okay, maybe that's a two-part question.
Yeah.
Where do I see the FDI coming in and what to do with the tax incentives or the global minimum tax coming in?
Yeah.
I'll probably take the first part, the second part first, the global minimum tax, GMT. Right? So now, it was originally supposed to be introduced in 2023, now postponed to 2024. I would say it's still quite fluid. It may not even be introduced in 2024, could be 2025, etc. Right? But the global minimum tax, when it is introduced, will impact every jurisdiction. It's not just going to be a Malaysia's problem, it's going to be everyone's problem. Mm. Right? And this will impact the very large multinationals. 750 million euros, that's about 3.5 billion ringgit in group consolidated revenue. Mm. So smaller multinationals are fine, they can still get their tax incentives. Now, the big multinationals, when they come to a country, yes, tax incentives are important, but it is not the only determining factor. Yeah? So I think it is going to be very difficult for Malaysia to try and design a tax incentive which in a way negates the global minimum tax. It's going to be difficult. And I believe most large multinationals are also aware of that. And taking that into account, they are probably want to start seeing as to what else can you give me if not tax incentives? So this is when I think Malaysia as a country needs to up its game in its ease of doing business, in its infrastructure, etc. So these are type of things which will then be able to differentiate us, hopefully, from other countries. Let's say, for example, Indonesia. Now, we're seeing Indonesia making a big push for EV, electric vehicles, and also the batteries for electric vehicles. Indonesia has an advantage over Malaysia in the sense that it's got its nickel, I would say, mines there, and also the nickel plants and all that. And it's also got a huge population compared to Malaysia.
With lower household income, though.
Yes,
of course. Unit economics works differently for Indonesia.
Exactly. Lower household income. But at the same time, is that from a multinational perspective, depending on if they are manufacturing in Indonesia, they could sell in Indonesia and also export to Malaysia. Yeah? That is a possibility. Mm. But Malaysia also, as far as I'm aware, is also making a push for EVs. Yeah? in terms of manufacturing.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. Tung Zafo was talking about increasing the capacity by 2025 by double and in 2030 as well. There's a roadmap on this.
So taking that into account, let's say if we were going to attract, let's say Mercedes, for example, the plant which you mentioned is manufacturing EV vehicles as well, as far as I'm aware.
Mm. Yep. They are.
Yep. But the EV infrastructure in Malaysia is still quite limited. Mm. So the government could invest money in building up the EV infrastructure in Malaysia. That would then, in a way, promote EV purchases in Malaysia by the populace.
That's the thing. I don't see the upside of government invest. Government shouldn't be in business, but just facilitate other investors to come in.
Yes, possible. Yeah. But sometimes it is important for governments to start that initial role. Sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. I mean, you think about it in terms of, telecommunication infrastructure.
Okay, I see what you mean, but we've had a mixed history on that one.
Yes, we had a mixed history on that one. But in a way, sometimes there will be leakages. It's unfortunate. But those are type of things which can be looked at.
Which is also important to harken back to what the Prime Minister has said. Leakages is actually core and central to how they do things. There's no point building new initiatives if the leakages are happening all the time. Yeah. Do you feel that investors look at this posturing by the government, especially Anwar Ibrahim per se as a man, that he is committed and big on the idea of corruption, battling corruption, and of course trying to deal with leakages?
Okay. I think... at the end of the day, if those leakages, if that corruption impacted the doing business for them in Malaysia, then they would definitely look forward to any, I would say, initiative to combat that.
We're looking at Malaysia's demography getting older. The age group of 30 to 50, basically, this is the support group, the group that will earn income for the household, is getting more and more burdened because Malaysians are indeed living longer. Nur Hisham of EPF called it a club sandwich generation, no longer a club sandwich generation, because two generations up, topped by one generation below, supported by this very narrow 6 million thereof, correct me if I'm wrong, taxpayers. Things are not looking good. So we're looking at defined contribution ideas of, say, Co-op, for instance, might not necessarily be there to support the pensioners. We're looking at income tax collection getting the most that they can possibly get. What's next when it comes to the tax system in Malaysia?
That is what keeps me awake at night, if you ask me, as a tax problem. Okay. And I'm sure it also keeps a lot
some rugby team that you support.
But I'm sure that also keeps a lot of our policymakers awake at night. We are supposed to turn to an aging nation in 2030. I will be an aged person in 2030. So I'm part of their generation.
Congratulations. I mean, but you can work until you know.
Exactly. So, in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of people withdraw their money from their EPF. Leaving aside government servants, so Co-op, government pensions aside, private sector, EPF is their main pension scheme.
You can't leave them aside? We're looking at 1.8 million in service right now with 2 million drawing pensions?
Absolutely. No. When I say leave them aside, I need to, I would say, split the two. Government servants and the private sector. Okay. So splitting it, let's look at the private sector first. EPF, I said many times, the vast majority of EPF contributors do not have enough funds in their accounts.
Only 3% has, if I'm not mistaken, 600,000 ringgit. And that number went up 4% last year, but again dropped back to 3% because of the withdrawals. So it's not looking good when it comes to EPF.
It's not, and that is what I'm afraid of. And right now, politicians are still saying, allow people to withdraw money from EPF. Allow people to withdraw money from EPF.
And I understand why. However, I disagree. But hey, people can't put food on the table.
Absolutely. And that goes back to my initial point that we probably need a kind of a social security system. So right now, what I would probably suggest, my personal view is that the government needs that reform because we are going to face a huge problem in the next 7 to 8 years when this comes. If we don't act now in terms of deciding how we are going to fund that, if we're unable to fund it, we are definitely, then it's going to be a short-term thing in terms of borrowing money to fund it, and that is basically an unsustainable part which will go down.
Household debt is already, what, 91%?
89%, exactly, like that? And talking about household debt itself, I think in the last couple of days there's been a lot of discussion in terms of the excise duty on cars. We don't have, I would say, a comprehensive public transport system. I lived in the Netherlands. I never had to buy a car, I could take a tram or a train anywhere I went. But in Malaysia, if I want to take a train or bus, yeah, it is a whole exercise in itself. Yeah? I've got to plan the whole thing. Yeah? So a car becomes an essential. Yeah? I know sometimes that you say that, okay, if you remove the taxes on car, there's going to be an explosion of cars on the road, etc. It's bad for the environment and everything. Maybe we could look at some innovative solutions while we build up our public infra, our public transport system. For example, in Singapore, you need to get a certificate of entitlement to buy a car.
Yeah.
It is possible here in order to also relieve the household debt burden on lower income families.
But this is burdening the M40s.
Yeah. Well, even the M40s to a certain extent, maybe a kind of a reverse certificate of entitlement in a way to, I would say, tell them that, okay, if you're going to buy a car, if you're within this, I would say, income group, I'm going to give you an exemption on the excise duty. So if you're M40, maybe not a full exemption, maybe a kind of a 20%, 30%, 40% exemption and all that, which will make the cost of owning your car lower. At the same time, make your most of the time you're going to be financing it via a bank loan. Yeah, make your monthly repayments lower as well, and that puts more money in your pocket.
Right. Taking a step back and looking at the forest rather than the trees, do you feel that Malaysia is on the right track right now? Is there optimism in the air, or you're still going to be an accountant and be pessimistic the whole way?
Well, to be honest, I'm a law graduate, not an accounting graduate. So I have to correct you there.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah.
No worries. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. From a tax perspective, all right, from the tax system itself, I am worried. Our tax system is not robust enough to deal with the challenges we are facing today and the challenges we are going to be facing a few years down the road. That is a major concern of mine. So hence, I believe we need a holistic reform. We need to relook at it. GST, I believe, is an important... It's not the most ideal tax because it can be regressive.
No tax is ideal, but we work with what we have.
Exactly. It's the best tax we know of in terms of expanding the tax base.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, it's a political hot potato. So my suggestion is that we are already giving so many subsidies. Yeah? Subsidies are coming to about 60 billion every year. So why don't
was 80 billion from the time that Tengku Zafrul mentioned back in October. It could go up to 100 billion.
I have basically removed the subsidies which we have given to, for example, farmers and fishermen.
Yeah? Oh, okay.
All right. So I think that comes to about 15 billion, if I'm not mistaken.
That, back to 60.
So that comes to about 60, which are these are the things for the electricity, the Bantuan Rakyat, etc.
Yeah, but majority of that subsidy, again, is on petrol.
Petrol comes to almost 40 billion kind of thing. I mean, end of the day, petrol. So let's say if we actually give a direct cash aids instead of building it into subsidy mechanism, direct cash aids through a social security system, it allows the recipient to decide how they want to spend the money.
Yeah, but that's the thing. The mechanism of delivery of these funds to the targeted audience, that has always been the case, not the idea of it.
Yes, yeah. But you see, right now, for example, I've read, for example, they are, I would say, tying themselves in the knots, for example, on trying to decide how to deliver the petrol subsidy.
Yeah.
I am saying abolish the petrol subsidy, give targeted cash aid, then allow the recipient of the cash aid to decide whether they want to spend it on petrol or they want to spend it on cooking oil or et cetera. Yeah. So you don't have to worry about how to deliver targeted petrol subsidies. You just worry about how to deliver targeted cash aid to those who need it.
You think that's going to be done, at least in the near term?
Most countries are doing that. Social security systems.
But what about other countries? Malaysia.
Malaysia needs to do it, but whether they do it or not, unfortunately, I don't have the answer for that. I hope they do it.
Okay, fantastic. That's a good way to end. That was our conversation with Aurobindo Ponia, the PwC Executive Director. Continue to stay with us on Astro Awani. We're going to be bringing much more content regarding Budget 2023. We also have a live show on the February 24th, so do stay tuned for that. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.